Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for ChartsAndMarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Here we are. How did we always seem to have a Friday each week. We were able to get together. I enjoy it, so here we are.
Yes, and we love to open up the show with listener questions. We have a couple of listener questions this week. The first one comes from Justin in Berkeley. We never have to say California because
no,
I don't know.
No, you don't have to.
No, no, Berkeley's Berkeley. Justin asks, Bob Allows says, senior currency becomes chronically strong at the start of a financial crisis. I noticed that the DXY dollar index blew by the ceiling into the 103 range. If the Fed perceives it cannot run indefinitely growing quantitative easing and slows down bond manipulation, are we in for the mother of all bombs, the MOAB? Is it time to dive under the desk?
Yeah, Justin, colorful. Yeah, the thing I've been using for years is that part of the post-bubble contraction, one of the key features is the senior currency becoming chronically firm against most other currencies and most commodities. And I always like to add for most of the time. And we have a good way of handling the U.S. dollar, the DX, and it built a six-month base. And then it broke above 91. That was getting above the 20-week EMA. And that completed the base successfully. And then when it broke above 93, that set the uptrend. And at that point, our target became the previous high at 103. And from 93 to 103 is a long ways. But it's made it this week. And also, technically, the DX is getting a little overbought. So how much of a correction or pause or sideways comes in, we don't know yet. But the clear thing is that the financial markets are under a lot of pressure, and the senior currency is going up. On the bigger picture, it's looking like one of these Wyckoff type of big bullish patterns. Some people call it a cup and handle or something like that. But at any rate, a correction could happen. It may not be huge, and if the financial markets get even into more trouble after mid-year, the dollar index can fly even further, and it's going to confound people, and it'll particularly distress the Federal Reserve because they have the privilege to depreciate their own currency, and when they can't do it, it must be very frustrating. So the next few months are going to be very interesting.
And our next question from Sam is connected to this, I believe. He says, Bob, I've noticed most financial markets seem to correct in the months of September and October. In 2022, this pattern may be repeating again after a 13-year bull market aided by quantitative easing by the central banks. And since 2020 government fiscal spending, Why do you believe financial markets turned down in September, October?
Yeah, Sam, you got this has been long fascinating for me, whereby it's the old thing about sell in May and go away. This year may have been a little earlier. And then you can, if there's going to be financial pressures, they'll be discovered in the fall of the year. It's there. Gosh, you've got, now going back to the first great financial bubble, the South Sea Bubble of 1720, that was the one where it was invented. I mean, hitherto nobody knew what they were about, but man, when that one took off, it became, in London there were more than 500 new issues floated, everybody was crazy, they had, well, they called them puts and refusals then, but they had the options that we call today puts and calls, so hey, it was all there. And the South Sea Bubble peaked, I think, 1,050 pounds in late June of that year. And then it dithered around in the summer months, and then, woof, got hit in the fall, and where you can say that the bubble started when the South Sea stock was at, let's say, 100 pounds, it went to over 1,000 pounds, and then it went back down to 120 pounds, the round trip. And with the worst of the selling in September and October, and then the market was, the lows were tested in that November, and then the storm was over, but it was followed by a financial contraction. And now, here's the pattern. In London, every subsequent bubble, like 1873 or 1929, peaked in May or June, dithered around in the summer, and crashed in the fall. The one that was a little different was the 1825 bubble, which was a big one, but again, it was May, June for the peak, and the crash continued in that one right down into January. So the officials at the Bank of England spent a very distressful Christmas. But you can say, okay, so you got there. Now, as to financial panics going back, there's, you know, evidence all the way back to Roman times, but not with the dates of, oh, wow, there was one in 33 A.D. or something like that, but not with the month mentioned. But there was, when the financial markets had moved to northern Italy, like centered in Florence, by the 1200s and 1300s, it was the financial center, and the big deal then was mortgages, and they became free trading, and there was a boom in them, and then a crash. And a financial historian by the name of Cipolla wrote a very good book on it, and that crash was 1347, 1348 kind of thing. Not related to the Black Death, I don't think, but at any rate, the worst times in that contraction, Cipolla notes, occurred in the fall. So all I can say is the same as you, Sam. You see it, it happens, but you can't really explain it. It's one of those things that the what happens, and to try and get why it happens, hey, that's for philosophers. So, and this market is looking like, well, it's deteriorating quite significantly. And we know that the greatest selling pressures seem to occur in the fall. So there we are. It'll be, as our view has been for the last few months, is that it might be able to hold it together to mid-year, but that doesn't matter. Just make sure you're raising liquidity, because in the fall, the liquidity will disappear, and the guys who've got some liquidity is in great shape. So thanks for the question, Sam.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out.
Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your attention today. The first one, U.S. dollar is king, best rise since 2012 in the greenback.
Yep, as we mentioned, the DX is up into the high 103s, and that was our target from a long time ago. And it's proving it's a long-running tradition that when you get into a financial storm, the senior currency goes up. And that is could be due to the fact that during the financial bubble, there's a huge amount of debt underwritten. And if all you need is, say, a majority of it, 60 or 70% being underwritten in the financial center, which is New York now, and due and payable in U.S. dollars, which is the senior currency now, then that is effectively a huge short position in dollars. So, and even you go back to the 1550s when the great trader Thomas Gresham was financial agent for the British Crown in the money market in Antwerp. And he, in his letters to the British Crown, explained very clearly the problems of servicing debt from a weak currency into a strong currency. And this is what happens. You get countries, say, ages ago, Bolivia, suddenly finding it difficult to service its debt, so it's got to sell tin to service its debt. So that's the way it goes. This is where you, following a great financial bubble, most everything deflates in price. So, and I'm convinced it's going to happen again here. Well, the last 2 weeks have really moved us along the path towards a contraction.
Recession on deck. U.S. GDP shockingly contracts 1.4% in the last quarter. Meanwhile, Canada's GDP went up 1% the last month. What's going on?
Numbers are interesting. That was the, I forget which agency in the U.S. that calculates it, but it was a quarter by quarter one, where the fourth quarter of the year was up 6.8% or something like that, and then the first quarter down minus 1.4. What the importance of it, Jim, is that in those previous great financial bubbles, the financial activity has become such a large portion of overall business activity that when the financial markets fail, it takes the economy with it. So in ordinary times in the financial markets, you'd have a peak in the S&P in a certain month, and then the economy would keep going up, GDP would keep going up, and it would typically peak 10 to 12 months later. And indeed, those who keep track of the leading economic indicators, still include the Standard & Poor's 500 in it. But now, 2007 was a very good bull market and close to being a classic bubble. And on that one, the New York Stock Exchange peaked in the middle of October. And the recession was declared to start that December, so not much of a spread. But if you go back to the 1929 bubble in New York, it peaked in early September, and the National Bureau of Economic Research, the NBER, are the official guys that determine the U.S. business cycle, and they then said that that horrendous recession started in August. So the economy had its best in August, the stock market its best in September, and then both headed south. Then the previous bubble, believe it or not, was 1873, and the NBER had reconstructed the business cycle, actually, I think, back to something like 1860. So at any rate, you have then that bubble in New York peaked in September, an ominous month, and the U.S. business cycle peaked in that October. So you can say it's more or less instantaneous. So what we've been talking, Jim, on the show, and I've been writing it for the last few months, that when the stock market peaked in early January and then took out a couple of levels that looked like a peak. But then in which case the economy would head south with the stock market, and indeed with that GDP figure, it has. So it works out. Again, while it's a dreadful event, it was, as far as research goes, rather exciting. So we are on the path to a post-bubble contraction that could become quite severe after mid-year. So this is where our advice is to build lots of liquidity, pay off debt, and just hunker down and ride it out.
Headline, China's economic slowdown is everybody's problem.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice, tight headline. And we want to look at, in a bubble year, which this bubble peak has stretched out over quite a bit of time, the problems first surface in outlying countries or financial markets. And this first appeared in March a year ago, when there were announcements that in Argentina and Turkey, their central banks had run out of liquidity, you know, so their currencies got hit and their short rates went up. And then a year ago in June is when that global contraction hit China. So then, for the last few months, we've been writing that with the sanctions against Russia, that now Eastern Europe was probably in the contraction. And all the way through, you know that it's going to end up in the financial center, let's say London and New York. And this is an ancient tradition, and even the Roman writer Cicero, 2,000 years ago, he wrote that if there was financial distress in the eastern provinces, meaning in the Middle East at that end of the Mediterranean, that it would eventually, the crisis would eventually hit the money market in Rome, and that was his observation then, and there are many examples of it. So here we have yet another one where the outlying economies and exchanges fell apart, and it spread from one country to the next, and it has now hit New York. So fascinating process to go from a great boom to a financial contraction.
An issue that caught your eye, free speech on Twitter with Elon Musk buying it for just over $40 billion U.S. The U.S. Securities Commission, meanwhile, reminds him he's still under a court order not to discuss financial matters on Twitter after he tried to sky his Tesla shares.
Yeah, very, very bold move on his part. And I've read what he's written on it, and I think underneath it, he is truly interested in freedom of speech and liberty, and has found a way to reform this big social media. I mean, the Twitter, Facebook, these things are so corrupt. It's a one-way street where you have had the unusual circumstance whereby people who are not businessmen but founded an idea and made a lot of money out of it, but they're still socialists underneath it, and they... And in today's world, the control freaks won't allow any opposition. So this is where you had the absurdity of Twitter canceling a sitting president's site, account, and at the same time keeping Putin's account open. So it's very one-sided, and it's fascinating to see that that Musk, with his financial power, is remedying a serious offense to free speech. Of course, the the left has gone crazy, and a senior legal counsel to the company, a lady, was in tears and all this sort of stuff. But it's really a sick political system out there whereby the left will not debate issues. They absolutely try and kill your issues. They do not allow any alternative point of view. And, of course, that's been shown back in communist Russia and Nazi Germany. So it is standard stuff for control freaks when they're going for full control. But fortunately, there is a popular uprising against it, and somehow Musk saw the issue, and with his skills, business skills, he may be able to reform it, and also may end up, and I hope, make some money out of it. It'd be quite the thing. So I applaud it, and it is an important step.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you, and looking forward to getting together again next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.